Today on Movie World, as we talk about Motherless Brooklyn and Black and Blue. Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. I thought that was a throwback to our Addams Family.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. Hello, hello, hello. No, that doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
All right, that's why I don't do that. very well. Time again for a podcast. We have a couple of movies to talk about this week, and unfortunately I haven't seen either one of them. So I was traveling to the UK. Bonnie Scotland is where I was for a week, and I saw a couple of movies on the plane. And just the only reason I'm going to bring this up is because I think a couple of podcasts ago we started talking about Notting Hill.
Yes.
And I hadn't seen it. I realized at the time that I had never seen it. So up it popped in the classics movie section of the of the British Airways flight that I was on.
How good is it, Joe?
You know, it's enjoyable, but it's kind of frustrating.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's very funny. I find it really extraordinarily funny, but I
How
really...
about extraordinarily romantic?
You know,
see,
I don't.
This is where sappy Yaz, the hard ass Joe.
I didn't get the romance.
Never the twain shall meet.
I really disliked the Julia Roberts character. I thought she.
See, that's what that was.
I thought
that was the contention.
She dragged this guy backwards through a hedge, and I thought she behaved so horribly to him that I was just like, dude, like, you know, go find a great girlfriend. He had Emily Mortimer come in as a potential girlfriend for him in this movie. I would have taken her 1,000 times over the Julia Roberts character. So, but metaphorically, Julia Roberts was awful in this one. But I did like the movie. It was extraordinarily funny. The jokes worked really well for me.
No love for Julia Roberts at this table, I tell you.
Yeah, we're looking at our Movie Wallers dog, Sawyer, with Rashmi. This makes for great podcast material, obviously. You can't see any of what we're doing here.
I got so distracted because she came up and I couldn't help but pick her up and give her a cuddle, and she's so adorable.
For the record,
she's
Sawyer the Movie
sweet.
Wallers dog is just adorable.
She's so cute.
Yes, dear, I don't know what you're doing. You're feeding her, but somehow she's getting sweeter and cuter.
She got bathed, yes. She's become more fluffy, for sure.
No, but she's just such a sweet-natured...
She's very sweet-natured.
Yes. ...dog. Yes.
And she's filled out a little bit, but she looks a lot better than she did when you first brought her home.
Yes,
she was a little underweight, I thought. Yeah. Anyway, we'll pop
Sorry,
that on Instagram.
That was a terrible distraction.
Just for that, I'm going to post the picture I took of Rashmi on Instagram. Sorry, Rashmi, it's going to be there.
Okay, because, no problem.
Yeah, I took a few too. Yes.
It makes up for the fact that this was a terrible segment.
Correct.
For anyone listening to this that knows exactly nothing about what's
even
happening
Joe's
here.
Even Joe's highly talented editing skills may not save this one.
All right, so... anyway, we are...
What else did you see other than Notting Hill, Joe?
Oh, gosh, I saw I saw the movie Anna. Have you heard of that one?
No.
It's by that director that did... he always does these femme fatale-type movies. Gosh, what's his name?
Is it A-N-N-A?
A-N-N-A, and the director is Luc Besson. So I saw his name alongside it. I thought, I'll give this one a go. This is truly terrible movie, and I loved it.
it's a disposable.
Yeah, it feels movie. Like, and I don't think I've seen Red Sparrow, but it's the same idea where
I've
we have
Red
this.
Yeah. Red Sparrow is not bad.
It's not bad.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
it's very poppy.
Yeah. I haven't seen it, and this is probably. Mega pulpy in relation to that, because it really is. It's this rags, this broken down, not rags to riches, but it's a broken down.
Is it a spy thriller?
poor Russian woman who gets, you know, recruited into the KGB, and then she becomes this amazing assassin. And you know, like all Luc Besson movies, it kind of has this style to it. It's really, you know, it's very visually, you know, engaging, and you know, it's kind of movie that I kind of wish I had seen on the back of, on the big screen, because, you know, on the back of an airplane, literally on this tiny little TV, you missed out on some of the visual stuff. But, you know, femme fatale type stuff.
I don't know about you guys, but I always find like movies that I watch on the plane just evaporate from my head.
Yeah, because you're in that state of being half asleep, half awake, for me at least.
Yeah.
So you're kind of watching them in a trance.
Yeah. Hence the kind of Netflix, you know, downloading is such a great joy.
Yeah, I watched Godzilla King of Monsters, which
how was that?
Definitely the back of an airplane movie.
Really?
apart from, you know, again, I wish I'd seen the bombast and the spectacle of it all on the big screen, but it was truly awful. And I'm dying for a good Godzilla movie. I mean, again, they walk this fine line of wanting to do this the Japanese legacy Godzilla movies with those, you know, very stereotypical, you know, geeky scientist characters, and then mix it, blend it with Hollywood, and it doesn't work. You've got to pick which way you want to go. So yeah, that was disappointing too. So, and there's probably a couple of other movies that are lost in the fog, but anyway, let's talk about our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on VOD. And I won't introduce why we do it. I think everyone that listens to the podcast understands what we're trying to do here. So what's in your picks of streaming? What picks do you have for streaming content this week?
So mine is actually The Movie Between Two Ferns by Zach Galifianakis. And how I ended up watching the movie is that I kept hearing about Between Two Ferns and how fun it was. And it's by Funny or Die. Right. And little 5-minute episodes where Zach Galifianakis almost does the Ali G thing where he does a serious interview, but you don't know he's actually making fun of the whole thing.
He asks very awkward questions.
It's very strange. So I binge watched all 20 episodes of Between Two Ferns, which is also available on streaming. I think it's actually available on Prime. And then the movie came out, and the movie is hilarious. In fact, the movie is better than all of the 5-minute shows. And many of the people who he interviewed in the series pop up again in the movie. And the movie is more of like a behind the scenes, a narrative about how Between Two Ferns came to be. So very Rashmi humor, little bit off kilter. Joe, you're going to hate it.
sounds like
really
that.
Funny.
So it's not just an hour and a half of him interviewing people.
No, it's the kind of the bits between him interviewing people, how he gets his guests and how they come on. But
he's
all
in character
done
the
for
whole time.
He's in character the entire time. And it's got a really funny, very game cast. It's just, I literally was laughing out loud. I had to actually stop it a couple of times because I think I was shaking my shoulders and disturbing the prima donna man who was next to me. So Between Two Ferns, the movie, it's hilarious. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
Have you seen any?
Yeah, I've seen. He did one, a famous one with Obama, where he, you know, he really stayed in character and he asked very awkward questions.
Correct.
To him. And I've seen the one with Bruce Willis. I've seen the one with Ashton Kutcher. So I've seen a few of them. Yeah. So my recommendation is a movie that may very nearly be perfect. There are very few movies which are almost perfect.
That's a
big thing to say. Yeah. I mean, maybe 10, I don't know, maybe 20 in the world, I don't know, or maybe fewer, I don't know. But The Talented Mr. Ripley is a perfect film. And it's perfect in that it gets the essence of the book on which it is based, and it has the exceptionally good sense to do, you know, beyond perfect casting. Everybody here is so perfectly cast. It's a cast to die for. Jude Law and Matt Damon playing the talented Mr. Ripley. Cate Blanchett is here. Gwyneth Paltrow is here. Philip Seymour Hoffman is here. Who else am I missing? But it's a great cat and mouse story. It's a story where, the lead man, the lead character is a psychopath. And, you know, we still somehow are invested in him. And it's visually gorgeous because it's so much of it is shot, you know, on the side streets of beautiful little towns in Italy. It's suspenseful. It holds up incredibly well. It's got a surprise at every corner. It's about a man, you know, who may just get away with murder. It's quite something. I think, Rashmi, it's one of your favorite
movies. It's one of my top 10 movies. I probably have this on my iPad at any given time and will watch bits of it. It's phenomenal.
It's a movie that I actually struggled to like at first. Rashmi, I remember you responded so well when we saw it for the first time. I can't remember if we saw it in the movie theater or if we saw it in, Blockbuster Rental, I think, back in the day. But I struggled to like it the first time, but because you love it so much.
And I put it on.
And then I get exposed to it more and more. Over time, it's also climbed really high up my list of movies because I think there's a lot of subtle and not so subtle aspects to the way that the story plays out. It doesn't necessarily show all its cards on first viewing, but when you ultimately know what the protagonist is about, then some of the early scenes have a completely different flavor to them. And again, I think, you know, Anthony Minghella, I think, was the director of this. And I can't remember if this one did it pick up any Oscars or anything? Because it's really fine film craft here. So yeah, terrific pick, Yazdi.
Yeah, if for any reason you have it, you've missed watching it, you really owe yourself. You do far worse than the talented Mr. Ripley.
I mean, I think it shows. I think, Yazdi, you said it. The casting is impeccable. I haven't seen more perfect casting for each one of those characters. It's almost like the roles were written for those people. I mean, how flippant and girly Kate Blanchett is to how loathsome Philip Seymour Hoffman is to how complex Matt Damon's character as Tom Ripley is to
how Jude Law is kind of playing everybody, how hateable
and kind of playboyish Jude Law is. And then I'm not a great fan of Gwyneth Paltrow, but she is amazing in this movie, and the motivations of the characters, and I can watch this again and again and again and pick up something subtle in someone's look or the dialogue or the costume. Everything is just phenomenal about this movie.
Yeah, it's just visually so amazing.
Yeah, it's a treat.
Yeah.
So Jude Law did win Best Supporting Actor at the BAFTA Awards.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's a movie that I feel didn't come with a lot of fanfare, and I think that's a shame, so I'm glad it's available.
20 years old. Came out in 1999.
Is it really?
Yep.
Oh, my word. Yep. Getting old.
Yep.
My pick, again, comes from the rather lazy what's being highlighted in Netflix queue, which is the Netflix original movie El Camino, which is a Breaking Bad spin-off movie. So fans of the TV show Breaking Bad will know very much that the stories that Vince Gilligan tells were wrapped up nicely, but we didn't get a fully satisfying ending for each of the characters. And so there's been rumors for a while that there was going to be a Breaking Bad movie in production. And so El Camino was picked up by Netflix and directed by Vince Gilligan. And it's a return to the world of Breaking Bad. And it picks up almost directly from the last episode, where I don't want to get too much into what this movie is about, but it picks up the character of Jesse Pinkman, who, we left at the end of Breaking Bad having escaped from quite a rotten scenario, but still very much a fugitive because of the events in the Breaking Bad story. So this movie is just a terrific follow on from Breaking Bad. In many ways, it feels just like an extended episode. So I think, you know, we're not going to give it a full review here on the show, but if I was to review it, I would criticize it slightly just for feeling a little bit like an extended TV special rather than something. You know, I always feel like TV series that go on to have a movie need to have a story that must be told, like some element of the story that just was so compelling that the writers said, you know, we have a duty to put this out into the world. And for me, it just felt like another episode of Breaking Bad. Now, you know, that's kind of like saying, well, yeah, it's just another pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream. I mean, you know, it's really enjoyable and it's really satisfying to see what he does with this character and some hints to what also happened post Breaking Bad. So I think it was a really, really fun movie, but not necessarily accessible to those of us that have not seen all of the Breaking Bad TV shows. So
you know how Downton Abbey, the movie, really took all of those beloved characters and kind of, in a very economical way, found a good closing off for all of them. Does this feel like it takes all those characters and brings them to a nice, neat ending?
It's one character.
Okay, it's just the Aaron Paul character.
It's just the Aaron Paul.
Well, there are a couple
Jesse
of others
Payton.
That are in there, but you know, they're more sideline characters. But
yeah.
And there could be another movie. It leaves the door open.
This is one for the fans, and this is one that almost has no relevance if you did not understand the Breaking Bad universe. That, you know, if you weren't a fan of the TV show from start to finish and got to the end of it, then there's not a lot here, I think, for you. But for those of us that we're kind of avid addicts of Breaking Bad, this is very satisfying.
I didn't love it as much as you, Joe. I think that Vince Gilligan did a better job with Better Call Saul in terms of the whole package. It was nice to see the world again, but I feel like it lacked roundness. I didn't feel satiated after it.
No. And Breaking Bad famously had those, you know, episodes where not a lot happened. I mean, that was one of the beauties of Breaking Bad. Vince Gilligan can, you know, direct still life and it might be...
And give you a heart palpitation,
absolutely compelling. And I personally think that Vince Gilligan is possibly the greatest example that I can think of as the director that really understands show, not tell. He does so much visually without a line of dialogue, without a character on screen at times, and yet still the film craft and the assembly and the editing and the camera work. I mean, he can tell a story visually and almost like I can't think of anyone else that does it as well as him. So it's got lots of that kind of stuff in it. I just feel like, Rashmi, I guess, you know, the story is somewhat underdeveloped. But again, not a full review. We just wanted to talk about that. So our Netflix picks are, Rashmi, yours was Between Two Ferns,
the movie.
Yes, the talented Mr. Ripley.
And mine was El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, to give it its full title. Plenty to watch on VOD. Do check those out.
Yes.
Okay, a couple movies to talk about this week. We're going to start, I guess, with Motherless Brooklyn. And I'll give that one a very quick intro. This is written and directed, interestingly, by Ed Norton. So, Ed Norton, is this a directorial debut? Because
no, he's done one other movie.
He has done one other movie. Because we obviously know Ed Norton as an actor for, you know, decades of fine, fine work.
And one of my other favorite movies.
Fight Club. We recently saw him in American History X, which was...
was amazing.
A recommendation from a good friend of ours who has been telling us for probably as long as we've known her to go watch American History X. And we did, and it's remarkable for
superb.
A 20-year-old movie how...
He's very committed, yeah.
He's and not it's, just it's how biting. Committed,
but... It's how relevant it is.
How that dialogue could literally... you know, be
have been
as
made
relevant
in the last
today.
Year.
Like,
yeah,
it feels like we are getting old. I guess it's like it feels like the world's not moving on.
Just to interject, he did make a movie. His only other directorial movie was Keeping the Faith, which came out in 2000, which was directed by Ed Norton. It's a very sweet movie. It's about him and Ben Stiller, who play two lifelong like friends who have been friends since they were kids, And Edward Norton becomes a priest. Ben Stiller
doesn't. I love this movie.
And they both fall in love with Jenna Elfman.
That's a great movie.
It's a very sweet movie.
It's not, yeah. It's not high art by any means, but that's a great movie.
Yeah.
So Motherless Brooklyn is set against the backdrop of 1950s New York and follows Lionel Esrog, who's a lonely private detective living with Tourette's syndrome. He ventures to solve the murder of his mentor and only friend, Frank Mina, played by Bruce Willis. I'll leave the description there. This movie is packing 144 minutes. This is a long one, guys.
Yes, we know.
And it releases in theaters wide opening on November the 1st. It stars Bruce Willis, Ed Norton, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, your friend Gugu.
Yes, he loves Gugu.
Bob, yes, he does love him some Gugu. With pop-ups, I guess, with Leslie Mann, Alec Baldwin, Willem Dafoe, Bobby Cannavale, Michael Kenneth Williams. So great cast in this.
Amazing cast.
I couldn't make the screening for this. I was in Borney, Scotland. But guys, what did you think of this one?
I don't know what to make of this one. It's too long. I give Edward Norton props for doing something different. This movie is a modern day noir. It's completely a noir. It's about gangsters and detectives and
New York
and gumshoes in New York. And
is it structured like
femme fatales and all of that. And you know, he plays a detective who has Tourette's and. You know, I think it's, we can talk more about that. But so he's really trying to do like a old fashioned noir murder mystery. But I think his indulgence gets the better of him. The scenes drag on and on and on. I love jazz, but for me, the score, it's a long movie. It's 2.5 hour movie. And there's jazz constantly playing to the point where I was like, just stop. You know, stop that music! And as if that wasn't enough.
Was it like the screaming cellos in?
Yeah.
Yes,
the scream. Yeah, the scream. Like the cellos working overtime.
Yeah.
But I know what he's going after. But I think, unfortunately, his ideas and his ideals probably got ahead of him. I think. He should have probably consulted, not he, but the whole team should have consulted someone and maybe pared this movie down. I think if it weren't so lumbering, it might have been better. It does lumber. Yeah.
You know what? I'm completely aligned with Yazdi. Exactly what Yazdi said. So I have to admit, it's such a slow burn that I actually had a little bit of a snooze. And I don't know if that's just because I was tired, but remember we always talk about the job of a movie is to keep you engaged and awake. And you should never feel like you can take a quick snooze, but I literally felt like I could take 10 minutes at a time and not miss much story. The set, the production.
Oh, the production design is incredible.
The acting, the costume, the lighting, it's all fantastic. But it's too convoluted as a story, and it's almost like a snake eating itself at one point in time. It's so complex that to keep up with it all is just too much. And 144 minutes, that's value for money. But, you know, it's too long. It should have been edited down. I have to say, though, he is incredible. He playing the Tourette's cop is just amazing. Amazing. Like, amazing. I'm going to say, I think this is an Oscar nom for him potentially.
Whoa.
Or award love for his performance. But as a movie, it lacked pizzazz.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, again, the same thing that I said in Joker, you know, when you're playing somebody with some kind of affliction, mental or physical or whatever, you carry a burden. You know, you cannot take it lightly. You cannot be flippant. You cannot be
comical. You can't make comical out of it.
You cannot pander, you know. So he does it really well. And, you know, he, there's a thing where he can't help saying, if he hears a particular word, he kind of says another similar sounding word with it. So,
and that's funny. I mean,
there are parts that are really funny.
It
keeps repeating for 2.5 hours and it never wears out its welcome. All the way through the end. Every time he'll see a cup and he'll say, Babadi cup. Or something, you know, or you know, so something, and they're, it's always very funny, so it never gets tiresome. He is very good, but people talk and talk and talk. And this is based on a very popular book of the same name by Jonathan Lethem, who is a very well-known writer. But for a noir, like you said, Rashmi, the story is so convoluted. It's so and there's, you don't have a chance in hell of knowing ahead of time. You know, as a viewer, if you're expected to solve this mystery with that person, good luck. You have no chance of doing it because you find out and then person C had something to do with person L and person M was involved. And it's like, oh, at the end, it's literally somebody is sewing through the maze and saying, okay, now we are going to take a left. Now we're going to take a right. And we'll get there. Don't wait. So it really takes a long time to connect everything. I liked pieces of it. The production design is incredible. For the life of me, this movie, a good portion of it, I want to say 30-40% of it is shot outdoors and it's shot in the streets of New York. And I don't know how you do, there are bridges and there are cars and there are chases. How do you do that in the 50s?
I kept looking down the streets for any clues because it's got like, you know, long, like wide shots of wide streets
with lots of people in it. And I don't know how they did it. So it's really
lots of money.
Yeah, lots of money probably.
I did like the there's a character, the bad guy is played by Alec Baldwin, and I think there's a very deliberate take on Trump. Like he was very Trump-like, and that was kind of interesting for me, especially because Alec Baldwin makes fun of Trump on SNL, and here he's playing a very Trump-like character. There's a lot of commentary about, you know, is it so bad if you have a lot of money? And so it gets into a lot of questions which are kind of good, but...
And relevant, right? Relevant, so again, there's a really good movie hiding in here.
Yes.
But it needs to be recut.
Yeah. And Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
You just wanted to say her name.
I love Gugu. And you know, you can cut a loaf of bread with her cheekbones. She has, you know, and her jawline. She has like the perfect face.
Like mine.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not so funny, Yasti. No,
why not? But her, have you seen her jawline? It's like a perfect.
Buy our bread sliced.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. but she has a difficult role, and she's there in a big part of the movie, but every scene drags on entirely too long.
I found her a little bit annoying.
Really?
She a little bit adorable. Damsel-y. You know, she needs to sort of be a Marvel superhero now.
Yes.
Because I'm kind of tired of seeing her play like the, you know, downward trodden victim. Yeah. Okay. I think we've run out of things to say like the movie. Yeah. Yes. Okay, I'll sum this one up. Look, I think this is a really good effort. I think it's an example of some incredible acting, but the story fails really badly on this one. I hate to give this only a 5 out of 10, but for me, average.
Dope. Yasti.
I'd give it a 6 out of 10, mostly because this is a work of ambition. It probably got a little lost along the way, and maybe somewhere down the road somebody can, you know, post an edited version of the movie which zips along more quickly. And, you know, it's kind of a waste. Willem Dafoe is one of our great actors. He has a bit part.
Everyone is good. Everyone is really good.
Bobby Cannavale is so good.
Even Leslie Mann is good in this.
Leslie Mann is so good. She makes the most of her little role. Yeah she's so good in it. But yeah. So it's an ambitious movie. Yeah. But yeah. If you're very wide awake and if you want to spend 2.5 hours, you could do it. But if you're sleepy, don't watch it.
Go post coffee.
Yeah, go post coffee for sure.
Take snacks.
Take many snacks, yes.
All right. Movie number 2 of the week is Black and Blue.
Yes, he's the only one of us that got to see this. I was traveling as well. Okay, so this is, and I did want to see this because I like the title. So a rookie New Orleans police officer is forced to balance her identity as a black woman after she witnesses two corrupt cops committing murder. Directed by Dion Taylor, it's written by Peter A. Dowling, and it stars, I love Naomi Harris, Mike Colter, Frank Grillo, and a whole host of others. Yassi, you're the only one that saw this. Is it worth us going to see this, and will I fall asleep?
No and no. So no, it's not worth going and seeing, and no, I don't think you'll fall asleep.
Okay.
I think, can I
just tell you something?
Yes.
Even as I'm looking at the IMDb page,
right,
just from the names of the characters, I know it's not going to be
right.
good.
Right, there are people called Moose, and somebody called Zorro.
There's Milo Mouse Jackson.
Right.
There's someone called Missy. Yeah, there's someone called Terry Malone.
Yeah, there's somebody.
I mean, it's Kingston's Lady.
The main character is called Mouse, and there's somebody called Zorro, and it's, anyway. So I think I shouldn't fault the movie. I think the movie is one thing and I expected it to be another. I think maybe intentionally or otherwise, the marketing for the movie would lead you to believe it's about racial profiling. It's about, you know, white cops and how they deal with black individuals. And it's been so much in the news. And I thought that's what the movie's after. It's not. That's not what the movie's after. The movie wants to make a pulpy, kind of a cheesy cop and robbers movie that used to show on Cinemax all the time late in the evening. It's a consummate crowd pleaser. So, you know, it has, you know, the bad guys get their comeuppance in really grand way. The good guys are faced with a lot of challenges. But the story has, you know, holes, you know, bigger than, you know,
Swiss cheese.
I was still trying to figure out, what is this movie about? Where is it going to get to the commentary? And then I realized after 20 minutes, oh God, there is no commentary here. This is just an entertainer. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with the movie being just an entertainer.
I thought it was going to be about like morals and, you know, being a woman cop and badass and so making the right decisions.
That's why it's such a great name. It's called Black and Blue because she's black and she's a cop. She's blue.
Yeah.
So she's a black policeman and therefore black and blue. But it would have you believe that every single person in her police department is corrupt. It'll have you believe that... six people are after her in a warehouse and she goes up metal stairs and nobody hears them. She calls somebody from the warehouse on the phone and those guys don't hear them. And then yet when she stumbles, like everybody can hear her. So it has like, you know, internal inconsistencies. I think there is one and only one reason to see this movie, and that is Naomi Harris.
She is so good.
She deserves to headline a movie and she deserves to carry a movie on her shoulders, and she completely single-handedly carries this movie. She makes every clunky piece of dialogue work. She has so much earnestness and she's the only one in the movie who believes that this movie is worth something and so committed and so completely believable and genuine. All her reactions are truthful. But, you know, the movie's kind of... Glenn Kay was sitting next to me, and when we both finished, when the movie ended, we both looked at each other.
And Glenn Kay, by the way, is a fellow movie reviewer.
He's a fellow movie reviewer. Yeah. He's actually the president of the San Diego Film Critics Society now. And he looked at me and I told him, well, they can't all be good. And he told me, well, actually, if you're wanting a B movie, you know, if you want a cheesy B movie, then it can't be better than that. So it's a very good cheesy B movie, but it's not what I thought it was going to be. And then, you know, I think it does some really bad stereotyping. I mean, there's like people, like I said, who are called Mouse and
yeah,
and then the bad guy has like this grill, you know, of teeth gold. I don't know, it almost seems like it harkens to like an 80s, urban kind of action movie, which is not a bad thing.
I was going to say, I mean, it seems like they set out to make something very conventional, maybe something by a director that's a little younger and less sophisticated in terms of what he's trying to to build.
And it's doing that strange thing again. The score is 49% by the movie reviewers and then 98% by the audience.
So that's what I mean by...
Again, it seems like it's a crowd pleaser.
It's a complete consummate crowd pleaser because it's one woman trying to do the right thing with the world which has turned against her, and she has to hide and fight until she's able to bring everybody on her side, and then they get their reckoning. And when they get their reckoning, it's great, and everybody claps and so forth. It's effective from that perspective.
In our last podcast, we talked about Gemini Man, which is a critical mess, but it's still a good time at the movies. Is that the case here?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it's a very good time at the movies. And actually, A.O. Scott in New York Times has given it a glowing review because he was tremendously entertained. I was just thinking, I'm so happy this movie is released and it's on the screen because people need to go see Naomi Harris and just get to know what a gift she is to cinema. But at the same time, I feel bad for a movie that we all saw at Tribeca earlier this year called Crown Vic. Do you remember that?
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Which was an amazing movie about a night in the life of a rookie cop who's paired up with, you know,
someone who's about to retire.
Somebody who's about to retire, and it's about different episodes that happen during the night while they're in their Crown Vic police car. And that movie is so much sharper, it's so much tighter, it has so much commentary, it's so much more clever. And it breaks my heart that a movie like Crown Vic, you know, with good actors, doesn't find distribution, and yet this movie somehow managed to find distribution. So there's plenty wrong with, with the state of film, but there you have it.
You know, I wonder, I mean, we haven't really talked a lot about it on the show, but you know how the movie theaters are trying this new kind of subscription model where, you know, you get to pay a monthly fee and then you get to see, you know, three movies a week or whatever it is. Is it, do you think anything like this is, you know, do you think this is the kind of movie that could be one of those filler movies if you're trying
sure,
to...
Sure, absolutely. I would recommend it. Yeah, definitely.
You know, I worry about the state of movies if that's the way we're going, that we're not necessarily looking for the best entertainment, but...
So it's a bad movie in that it has plot holes and so forth, but it's a very good movie in that it wants to entertain you, and it does that, you know, with shovels.
Right.
So, you know, it's really a very good entertainer. And again, my big problem with it is I was expecting this, you know, this movie which talks about race relations when it comes to cops in the US, and it doesn't at all, which is very strange because the movie does this kind of annoying thing where anytime a white character interacts with a black character, we hear like this ominous music, like, you know, one or the other is going to kind of fly off the wheels. And
right.
And I don't like this kind of portending where it's almost implying that in America right now, any interaction between a black person and a white person is inherently filled with danger.
We're on different teams.
Yeah. So, but again, Friday night movie, if you just want nothing to kind of clog up your brain and you just want to watch a good, silly, effective thriller, then this is it. And Naomi Watts is the tops. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you. Your score is...
My score would be a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Well, that's not bad. As good as Motherless Brooklyn. And not as long.
And not as long at all. And far more entertaining.
Before, I guess a 6 is not always a 6, right? I mean,
right. Our
it's score
a 6.5, really. But yeah.
So just before we wrap up, I mean, you know, we did see a couple of great movies at the San Diego Film Festival. So I think
we will
try and talk about those in a future podcast, especially.
But we can give you the names if anyone gets a chance to see them. I think glowing reviews from all of us that saw them.
Jojo Rabbit, Parasite.
Marriage Story.
And Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
So again,
which is watching paint dry, but for a good reason.
You sold it to me there, actually.
I did, yeah. It's a good movie.
So
really good movies coming out.
Yeah, it's the time of the year now when all the movies that have been held over because they're prestige and deemed to be good and awards worthy will start coming out really soon.
Yeah.
The feast begins.
Yes.
Indeed. Okay, too many movies, too little time. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate your listens here on Movie Wallace. So especially those of you that can make it to the end of our podcast. I think you're a rare breed indeed, and we appreciate you. So thank you very much. Until our next episode, Two Me Movies, Two Little Time, a goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.